Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The biggest convention of its kind ever in the UK, Wrestling MediaCon 2018, is heading to Manchester on the 8th and 9th of September. Wrestling MediaCon 2018 will feature live wrestling shows from Revolution Pro and Impact Wrestling, meet and greet with all the talent, panel discussions from the likes of Inside the Ropes, and workshops on how to get into the world of professional wrestling from former WWE writers and bookers. There will also be guest matches from Defiant, NGW, and an NWA World title defense by Nick Aldis, taped for 10 pounds of gold. Other names announced for Wrestling MediaCon 2018 include The Wrestling Observer's Dave Meltzer, Colt Cabana, Sean Waltman, Cultaholic, Botchamania, myself and Ollie from the Wrestle Ramble, and many more to be announced. Wrestling MediaCon comes to the Bowlers Exhibition Center in Manchester, England on the 8th and 9th of September. Tickets are available now from WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am... Whoa. What is that?
Sorry, you're pointing to a 4-star review on iTunes.
I was doing the multitasking feat of loading up iTunes reviews while actually saying the intro. And we sort it by most recent, then we scroll down to the last one we think we read out. And then there it is. The second most recent review is 4 out of 5. Who gives a 4 out of 5-star review? It's either 5 stars or 1 stars. There's no in-between for a podcast.
Maybe it was a slip of the finger. That's what she said.
Okay, well, I've just skim-read that, the whole review. I'd give you 5 stars, but not only do you not like the one-winged angel, but you are not in we're not in Jeddah.
Oh, okay, so he was making a joke.
Well, that's funny, but it's not enough to let you off the hook. You know who you are, low_rider100. I want to see that corrected to 5 stars by the time we get to reading your review out.
Which will be in a few, probably about a month's time, I'd have thought.
It's unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Also, the joke would have been funny if it was Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, but Jeddah's funnier, I think, at the moment. Man, are we... We're actually... No. We're not that... Sorry. I am Ollie Davis, and I'm joined... by Luke Owen.
Hello, SWAF Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. You and I were intending to do a short podcast intro and outro because we have about 5 other hours of stuff that we need to record, including Saturday's episode, which we're going to record once we finish this. And we've still got more stuff to record for Ramble Club before we get on out of here. But I did forget to ask you yesterday, your parking situation, your parking nightmare you had... You kind of teased it on the Raw review, and then we didn't discuss it.
Well, it wasn't. I did tease it as, man, this is a tedious story. But I'll do my best to recap it briefly. Pretty much, I thought I'd play the system of parking by... There was a little offer where if you went to Cineworld, which is a cinema chain in the UK, and saw a movie and got a ticket, you could cash that in at the car park next to it for free parking. And I thought, this is amazing. I could go and see WWE Raw, get a free ticket, because I get free tickets because I've got a special Cineworld card. That's not a celebrity thing. Nope. It's something you pay a flat £18 subscription for every month. So I went and got a ticket for Infinity War, and then I went to cash it in at the end of the night thinking I'm the big dog. I'm not the big dog. I'm Big Cass. The parking attendant looked at me and went, oh, yeah, that you're not in the right car park? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, this is where the O2 car parks stop, and your car is here. And it, literally, we're talking
meters.
Well, it's more than meters, but it all looks the same. That's TfL's car park.
Oh, no. No, TfL car park. That's Transport for London, if you're an American or not a UK listener.
Independently
or actually not even
run.
A London listener.
Yeah, independently run. Did not qualify for the offer. Had to pay £13, which was fine.
That's still pretty good.
It's though. Actually very competitive for that part of London.
It's about like £31 to park in the O2, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. So it could have been worse, but it could have been a lot better. And then, yeah, it was total gridlock getting out of the O2. I was sat still for about 20, 25 minutes. And for a good 15 minutes of those, two young chaps who were very kind enough to recognise me was sitting in the car next to me.
And
I was just trying to do everything but not look at them because it was, you know, you get a bit embarrassed, don't you,
yeah,
when these things happen.
Especially if you're then stuck in that situation.
Mm. It's fine for like a minute to 2 minute long thing. You're like, oh, hi, Hal. Oh, thank you for watching the show. And it's like, oh, now I don't know what to do and you don't know what to do. And now it's just an awkward thing that we're stuck in because our cars can't physically move anywhere.
But it is funny as well because when we were going to the arena, your lady partner rang and was like, are you in the car? And you went, yeah, I decided to drive. And she went, huh, really? And you were like, yeah. She's like, is the traffic not bad? And you're like, no, it's fine. Because on Google Maps, it says it's only going to take me half an hour to drive home as opposed to the hour on public transport. But was it?
Well, I was 5 minutes up and I didn't have to deal with the proles who get public transport.
So it's a lot
more pleasurable.
So it took you 55 minutes. Fair enough.
Therein. I mean, you know.
Hey, man, I met two really nice guys on the tube home. It was lovely. I chatted with them all the way to, I think, London Bridge.
Well, we've got to be in and out of here quick today, as my chat up line used to be. So let's get on with the show. The New Day, where it was a normal match. It's not like the New Day have turned on each other, but at the end of this match, the commentary was very much playing up the idea that we could start to see the New Day go their separate ways. And this is because the New Day won their match against the Bar. And the idea was whichever team won would get to choose one of their team to go on to Money in the Bank and compete in the Money in the Bank match. So one out of either Kofi Kingston, Big E or Xavier Woods is in the Money in the Bank match. But of course, it's up to them to decide.
It is indeed. So it's going to be interesting as well, because you are right, like Corey Graves in particular, as soon as Woods won the match, he essentially said on commentary, this is the implosion of the New Day, this is where it all comes to an end. And Byron Saxon's going like, no, they're all best mates, they'll be absolutely fine. So who knows where this is going. But it's interesting.
Who?
Where? But it's interesting as well, because they when the New Day cut a promo before Greatest Royal Rumble, they had this whole spiel about how, like, hey, we're essentially going to win this Royal Rumble as a unit. However, only one of us can win. And it's Xavier Woods who's cutting this promo, and he's like, and we all know that's Kofi Kingston. And Kofi's like, what? Why me? And they were like, because you're the best one out of all of us. You have to win this. So I wonder if it's almost like this could be a possibility that the New Day is going to implode. But they also do have a track record of being like, when one of you wins, we all sort of win. Like, it's the same when they had the tag belts. It's like, hey, we have the tag belts, but all three of us are tag team champions. So there isn't really that sort of tension within them. But will one of them getting more success than the other kind of lead to some jealousy, that lead to that Big E heel turn that a lot of people think might be coming? And you have...
Who thinks that might be coming?
Well, there's a lot of people. I mean, there's no like...
Who?
There's no like dirt sheets or anything saying like that. It's just like Gorilla Position have always been saying they think a Big E heel turn is coming. I've seen people online say that Big E's got to be turning heel on the New Day and things like that. So it's something that is a possibility. And Xavier Woods is such a great single star as well. I'm really, really high on him at the moment. But I mean, so what are your thoughts on the possible New Day implosion?
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to see these guys break up on bad terms. We've said this from the moment they started to properly get over as an act. Weirdly, as heels. It's weird to think of the New Day being obnoxious heels, not really changing anything about their characters, and still being completely over as babyfaces.
Do you remember their original version?
Yeah, when they were the sincere version.
The sincere version, when they were babyfaces, and then talking about the power of positivity, and I was like, nope, this is rubbish. And then they just did the same shtick, and it became a heel act.
It was not only rubbish, it was kind of like old man unconscious racism directed by Vince McMahon, I assume. Like, this is a good thing, yeah, let's get the minstrel show out. Like, that's what the kids like in the vaudeville these days.
It's so funny. Their interview with Jericho, like way back when, like when they sort of almost got together as a unit, and they were doing, and Jericho like asked him, was like, what was the possible team names that you were presented with? And one of the team names they were presented with was Fresh Coat of Paint. Like, just the fact that someone even presented that as an idea for a tag team name.
Hey, sometimes you just got it. You just throw a load of ideas out. It's unfair to, I mean, if some people saw some of the names we come up with for shows.
Like what?
Well, they're all, you know.
In all fairness, this name, we sat down just before we turned the camera on and was like, oh, what are we going to call this show?
I mean like show format names. Like, you know, the Wrestle Ramble was once called That Wrestle Talk Show.
No.
Like That's So Raven.
Yeah, or That 70s Show. I think that's more or less our thought process.
That's terrible.
It was awful.
I thought that was a good idea at the time.
I thought it was a placeholder name. It worked for a while.
But yes. Anyway. So we shouldn't judge people. Sometimes people just scatter
people
ideas.
People in glass houses should not throw stones.
And So who's gonna move on? There's totally an argument for Kofi, and I think as people, the New Day want it to be Kofi. They're all like Big E and Xavier must think the world of Kofi Kingston. Watch their table for 3 episodes. They're always going on in the little backstage WWE.com exclusives that Kofi is one of the best, most unsung heroes in WWE. And look, he really is. Been with the company for over a decade. He's one of the longest serving veterans. He's just got a body and a face that doesn't appear to age. We watched Money in the Bank 2011, which was 7 years ago, which is just insane to think about by itself. He doesn't look any different. WrestleMania, the Money in the Bank ladder match at WrestleMania 25. That was 2009-8, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't look any different there either. The man has some kind of anti-aging magic going on.
So perhaps he could be the one that turns heel. Because you can do this video package of the New Day bigging him up, and all of a sudden Kofi's just like, yeah, I am better than both of you. Why have I been wasting my time with you two jabronis when I'm so much better?
Yeah, well, I don't think they should turn heel.
No,
so
neither do I.
So all I'm just scraping that to the side. I'm just thinking of it in terms of which one they would get behind. Because if one of them goes on in this singles run, that doesn't mean they all have to split up as a unit. The other two can go for the tag titles or wrestling tag matches, and the other one could just be at ringside. It doesn't mean, like, when someone goes on a singles push, it doesn't mean they completely forget about all their friends. In WWE, it sometimes does, sure, but hopefully they wouldn't do this here. But Kofi Kingston, I think that the continuity-wise, it would make sense with all those backstage segments and stuff that Kofi should be the one to do it, because Big E and Xavier, as their characters and real life, they want him to do it. Me, personally, I want Xavier Woods to do it. I feel like Xavier Woods is the guy with the most potential there. He's an excellent underdog. I've loved him from his Consequence Creed days in TNA.
Consequences Creed.
Consequences Creed. What did I say?
Consequence Creed.
Consequence Creed. That was his pre. That was before he became Consequences.
I see.
Back when he was, it's like Alien and Aliens.
Okay.
And he's such a good babyface. He's a really good wrestler. And even though he's a shorter guy, I feel like he's got such a good physique, it kind of makes up for that. Kind of like Buddy Murphy, he's a shorter guy, but because he's so physically impressive. And he's got the huge YouTube following as well, that all makes sense, and you can build that in. People want to get behind him. So there's that. That's my personal pick. But then there's the reports that came out last week that WWE backstage are looking at giving Big E this big singles push. Because he's big, and... well, he's wide, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He's not that tall, actually, at all.
No, but he is big.
He's got a very unique shape about him. He's very strong. So he's a guy who could do it as well. WWE are in a very good position where three guys are all equally brilliant in their own special way. That's probably why they're such a good unit. But for a ladder match for Money in the Bank, I would say it's between Kofi and Xavier for me. And do you want the veteran or do you want to elevate a younger guy? Mm-hmm. So, and for me, it's the younger guy with Woods.
That is where I would fall as well. I think that Woods is, it would be my pick to go in there. I think we said this on yesterday's show that Big E would be my third pick to go into this match. And that's not a slight against Big E because I think he is really awesome. In fact, actually, like during his feud with the Usos, when all of a sudden he became that serious Big E, like he just had that sudden turn where he stopped just doing goofy nonsense of throwing out pancakes and was like, it was like, yeah, it's get real, son, promo. It was awesome. And I think he could be a really great upper mid-card main event talent. But it's, for me, at this point, if there's one guy that I want to see go ahead in a singles career, it's Xavier Woods.
The interesting thing about Big E is he doesn't need the Money in the Bank ladder match. He can get over by himself as a singles. And Xavier Woods could as well. But I feel like him being in the ladder match has the most upside for him out of the three. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking about it in where everyone can end up net, moreover, I feel like that's the way to go.
My question to you would be, do you want to see the New Day implode? Are you ready to see them done as a tag team?
Yes, yes. I don't want to see them implode, turn heel and split. But I, they've done everything they can do. They can still reunite as matches. In fact, it's probably best for them to keep as a two-person tag team and for one of them to go off into a mid-card title picture and see where it all ends up. And then, maybe a year down the line, you have a big six-man feud that you need to do. What about you?
I'm in a similar boat, actually. I think they've done pretty much everything they can do now. And I think because they are like such massive merchandise sellers, you can't really afford to break them up in the traditional sense. But to do what you were just saying then, of just like keeping two of them as a tag team and one of them getting a bit of a singles run, kind of like what they did with The Shield, where you had Seth and Roman were the tag team and Dean was your singles star. You can do that, and then you could do, Xavier Woods can go off and do his feuds over here while Kofi and Big E remain as tag champs or as a tag team competitor. And SmackDown does need to kind of, I feel like it needs to bolster its tag team division ever so slightly, because you've got the Bludgeon Brothers, dominating. But then, they haven't done anything really since WrestleMania, because the Usos haven't been on TV. Gallanderson haven't been seen since they came over. They had that one moment with AJ, and that's it.
Hell of a Kinshasa from Shinsuke.
Hell of a Kinshasa. It's taken them out so much, they're not even getting booked.
It's taken them, Carl Anderson, out so much. Luke Gallows is off.
Exactly. So I feel that they need to keep hold of at least a tag team in there. Because if New Day go, then that's one less tag team you've got in the division.
Sanity.
Apart from when Sanity comes across, which we'll come on to in a minute. Because, I'm now almost certain that's where they're heading with the Bludgeon Brothers promos.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states.
United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Before we get on to the main review, oh, we've reeled you in because we've got some pledge hammer shout outs to do. Those are people who donate to WrestleTalk's Patreon page or $25 or more, which gets you a shout out on this show. And if you were, you don't know the concept behind this bell, it's a Hall of Fame ring.
Such a good pun.
Get it?
Such a good pun.
Thank you. So, thank you, Dead the Pool Warrior. You looking forward to seeing the sequel?
No.
You loved the first one.
I thought the first one was a 3-star movie. Maybe a 2. I'd have given it a 2.5 on Letterboxd.
I was reading the reviews yesterday, and it said, if you loved the first one, you probably really will like the second one. But if you didn't like the first one, probably not for you. And I thought, I'm going to force Luke to see it anyway.
Which is essentially why I went to go see the first one anyway, because you and I were doing a movie review podcast, and I had to go and see it so we could do a review of it. Even though I wasn't that keen on it because I don't like Deadpool comics.
Neither do I, but I really like the movie.
Deadpool comics aren't as funny as they think they are, and the film was just as obnoxious.
What about this guy, though?
Britain's next top model, Phil Stopford.
The stepbrother, Brendan McCulloch.
Killer Chris Phillips.
The real true heel, Len Bren.
Just realised my stepbrother gag doesn't work anymore because I thought it was Clough. Because it sounded like Brennan Huff is the character in Step Brothers.
Wow, that is
tenuous. It was a deep cut, but it doesn't really work anymore. Jonathan, the headmaster headman.
The mayor of Painesville, Dan.
Dan.
We love you, Dan. From Austria, I hear. That's where he's from.
That's a personal joke for you, Dan, that you'll get to hear about more in Ramble Club. Draft House Games.
The Sea Cred Society.
Lewis, not-so-nature boy, Milroy.
Steep Climb, James McMahill.
You sold out, Jay Sellers.
Juan de Dios, Infinite Gorlet.
Corey, just Corey.
Let's have a drink, Christopher Travis Merriman.
And Daniel J. Great Scott. It's a SmackDown review, Maggle, I love it. We got us a flying Uso.
So the full episode of SmackDown kicked off with AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura in like a video package. It was a new way of presentation. It was just like still images and the commentators talking over it. I suppose in place of Shane McMahon coming down and saying, hey, yo, this is what's been happening for the last few weeks. Or just a standard video package. It was fine. Why not just do a normal video package?
Well, I think this is the way they do their video packages now, because what WWE really like is when they get mainstream attention, is when they get like websites writing stuff about them. So they like to promote the fact that, like, hey, CBS is talking about a Ronda Rousey match. So they put like, you know, so they have like still images of it, and then say Bleacher Report have done a review of it. And they said that this video package was essentially it was supposed to trick us into believing that this has been like an all-time classic feud that like everyone has been raving about. And that was leading up to, and this was, I found stunning, and I got slightly confused when watching the promo for SmackDown Live. And then maybe it's just because I didn't want to believe this was happening. Because then when I was chatting to some guys on the tube back, they were like, yeah, and it's AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura tomorrow. And I was like, is it? Because, I mean, that just doesn't make any sense whatsoever, why they would have a match now.
It makes total sense, Luke, because they've got to decide what the stipulation is for Money in the Bank.
Oh, cool. So we're having a match to set up the same match.
Yes.
Awesome. Cool. I love it when I get to see a main event on TV for free to build up a match that's going to be on pay-per-view that I have to pay for.
Yes, it is. It's not how I would do it. The WWE are just scraping by with this because AJ Styles and Nakamura are very good together, especially with Nakamura being a heel. Because imagine if this was all the case without a heel turn.
Yeah, no.
This would be atrocious, and we'll all be like, no, don't keep doing this match over and over again. But the fact of the matter is they have had 4 very good matches now, including the one tonight, or the last night. But yeah, it's insane. Like, why would you... I hate it when they do a match to build a match without the title on the line to build to a title on the line, because it you give it away and you overexpose the action. And on top of the three matches we've had in just like 4 or 5 weeks already, WrestleMania wasn't that long ago. And we've now seen AJ versus Nakamura 4 times. We're going to have seen it 5 times by the time Money in the Bank rolls around on June 16th, I think it is. So it's so typical of WWE. Oh, you like that thing. You want that thing. We're not going to give it to you forever. And then we're going to give it to you too much.
Yeah, it is. It's total overexposure. And not only that, but when you do the match to build to a match, one person has to lose. So AJ Styles lost the match. I mean, with spoilers for the main event. But AJ Styles lost. So now we're going into this title match with him as a loser. And a much better way, a much simpler way of doing this would have been doing to beat the clock.
Yes.
Where they just had 2 singles matches, and the person who pins their opponent the quickest, or if they indeed pin their opponent, which you would want them to, pin their opponent the quickest, gets to choose the stipulation. Therefore, both men win, and then you're having a battle of who's the best winner, as opposed to just another match where one of them is a loser and one of them was a winner. It's really funny as well, because last week you and I were talking about how it's quite interesting, because AJ won at WrestleMania, but then the other two have been these cluster F finishes, so we don't know who the real decisive winner of this feud is now. But now we sort of know, because Nakamura won, and then they're just going to have this match again at Money in the Bank.
The other exciting thing about that was that they were setting up Daniel Bryan, they were setting up Samoa Joe. You had this mix of 4 legit top guys who are all over in their own way with their characters as they're meant to be. And now it's, and you know, it's AJ and Shinsuke. I'm not too upset by that, but it's almost like, because Money in the Bank is coming up, you've got to have a lot of people going into that match. So I assume we're losing Joe to the Money in the Bank match. Daniel Bryan inexplicably is carrying on a feud with Big Cass, when you could draw out these 4 to 5 AJ Nakamura matches over the course of 6 months to 9 months, or even a year, by interspersing Joe and Brian, have a triple threat, have a 4-way, have it Joe versus AJ, have it Brian versus Shinsuke. You know, you weave those all in and you tell a longer story. You don't like do... It's like how I used to eat my dinners. I used to be very particular as a child, and I would go, okay, I'll eat all my beans first, then I'll eat all the mashed potato, then I'll eat all the sausages, because like that was how my mind worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then all my parents would say, mix them.
All of your parents?
All of my parents would say, mix them, have a little bit of beans and mashed potato and a sausage. And I'd be like, no.
That's madness.
That's crazy. I've got to complete each level. Yeah. There's a structure to this dinner, and I'm not going to mess it about. And then I started eating that way. It's so much better, because you get the different flavours and the tastes all clashing against each other. That's the point of a meal, right? Otherwise, you would just eat single things.
Yes.
Throughout the day. And that's a very weird analogy. I'm hungry, guys. I'm quite peckish.
Yeah,
we
haven't had lunch yet. I made this point in the SmackDown review as well, is that this is the 4th match in 6 weeks that they have had, and they're going to have another match again in a few weeks' time. Compare that to, you know, what is actually considered to be an all-time great feud between Kazuchika Okada and Kenny Omega, who were setting up their 4th match in 18 months. Like, that is an 18-month storyline to build to this ultimate match here. And that's... Who's more excited for that match? Am I excited to see AJ versus Shinsuke again in a few weeks' time? Or am I excited to see Omega Ricardo 4? Because it's been 18 months in the works.
And almost a year since the last encounter.
Yeah.
But you know, that's in the Tokyo Dome. So that... Or it's... I don't know if it is actually in the Tokyo Dome.
No, I don't think it is.
It's somewhere in Japan, which makes it immediately more exciting.
Yeah.
But you're totally right. I mean, the beat the clock challenge would have been the better way to do this. Or like, I mean, even a tag match. I don't... Like, that's not as good, but something...
Something.
Anyway.
Rather than terminal. But the reason why, really, the reason why we got this match is because they're in the UK. And it's sort of seen as like a special attraction thing. It's like, hey, when you come to the UK, you get a WrestleMania quality main event. You know, you don't get that when we're in the States, but over here we do the... So, and they did Cena, Shawn Michaels doing the hour-long match on that Raw taping that one year.
But there is a dark match.
Yeah, well, no,
I know you can't promote that on TV as much, but yeah.
I think the dark match was Jeff
AJ versus Nakamura again.
I think it was Hardy Miz.
Yeah, apparently Hardy might have been injured. That's what I read.
Oh, really?
He looked like he was limping. But so the show kicked off after that announcement that Nakamura and AJ would be facing each other again, with Daniel Bryan coming out following last week's loss to Rusev. And they played this up really well. Bryan came down, you know, and it felt like they were making a big deal of a match result. Without a title on the line, it was just Bryan lost, Rusev won, and both of their storylines and their characters now are affected by that outcome. Rusev is very happy, he's on the ascent. Bryan here, a bit more somber, and Renee Young talks to him about it in the ring. And the crowd would not stop chanting Daniel Bryan, even when Renee was talking. Why did she carry on talking?
Because that's the script.
I know,
there's,
but like,
there's no pause there to let the crowd chant.
But Renee, you gotta like let the crowd. That was a lovely organic reaction.
And Daniel Bryan clearly saw this and was just like, he just grabbed it. It was like, just let them do it. Feel this.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful, wonderful moment. But then, like, it's interesting as well that you say there that you felt that they were really following up on the loss to Rusev last week, because I didn't really get that from this. Because Renee Young's promo after that was just like, hey, you won at WrestleMania, you did this, you did this, you did this, you did this, what's next? And then he was like, cool, I'm going to be at the top of the card, I'm going to be WWE champion. And then Big Cass came out. But there was a massive, there was a mad awkward pause while they were waiting for Big Cass to come out. Missed his cue.
Yeah, yeah. Look, Renee should have, I'm a huge fan of Renee, but she should have been better in this segment.
Like, yeah.
She should have let the crowd chant, even if she's told not to. Just, you know, do what's best for business, best for TV. But I felt like they did probably not as much as you're right. They should have made it a more integral part.
Yeah.
If it was proper storytelling, but this is, it's a win for WWE. They slightly paid attention to a match result.
Well, that's the thing is they last week we took a bit of flack. In fact, I took a lot of flack because I was quote too negative on SmackDown, a show I gave 4 out of 5 to. But it's because the WWE story they were telling was that Bryan is an underdog. And it's your underdog story. That's what Bryan has always been. But yeah, that wasn't really followed up on here, particularly when... So Cass comes down. Cass cuts this long promo on Daniel Bryan about how much Daniel Bryan sucks, trying to make the claim that he tapped out quickly at Backlash because he wanted to get out of the hold and beat Bryan down. And you know, he's making all these things. He's like, wherever you go, and there's going to be the 7-foot shadow hanging over you. I'm big, Cass. You're small. I'm big. I'm better than you. Then you go in the ring, and Daniel Bryan quite easily beats him up. And I just thought to myself, it's like, it's really hard to get invested in an underdog story when the underdog keeps winning.
And a big monster, big tall guy who keeps on getting tapped out.
Yeah. Like, my favourite... Oh, yeah, because he tapped out again in this segment.
Very quickly.
Like, my favourite sports movie is The Mighty Ducks. And do you know why I like The Mighty Ducks? It's because The Mighty
Ducks... Because it was made in the 90s.
And I love, bloody love the 90s. Because The Mighty Ducks is about this ragtag group of team that comes together. And what's brilliant about this as an underdog story is that they're just awesome from the start. And then they win all their matches and they get to the big final and they win the final really easily. Because it's a true underdog story. And being facetious, they don't. They have to overcome the odds in order to win. Because that's how an underdog story works.
I haven't seen it for a while. I was like, really? Is that how they...
No, because that would be a terrible film.
Hey, that's booking strong. That squash matches all the way through. That approach works well as well. But you're right, it's not the underdog story they're trying to tell. Cass's promo here was good. It had like the words were good, some of the bits were good, whereas like, should Daniel Bryan stay at home and let Brie wear the trousers? Yes.
Yeah.
And he did a few, but just like, it was too much. He had like 5 different bits like that in this whole thing. And after a while, you're like, not only are you bored by Cass, even though he's got good stuff and his delivery is good, it's just too long. You're also thinking, Daniel Bryan, why are you just standing there? Why haven't you ran out and started to shut his mouth?
He proved his point when he got in the ring, I suppose. He didn't need to say anything because as soon as Cass got in the ring, he just single away. Like, the referees saved the day, essentially. If the referees weren't there, Daniel Bryan would have like put him on the injured list.
Yeah. So I just I see
what you mean. Absolutely. But that's it's WWE scripting of just like, I've got to wait until this person has finished their lines.
Yeah, your go, my go.
Yeah.
It's how they structure their matches as well.
It is, yeah.
Heat on me. Now I come back.
Yeah.
Then we got the New Day versus The Bar match with Miz on commentary because he's already in Money in the Bank. This was good. It was good. It was very good.
Yeah,
as always.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a formulaic WWE tag team match, but really fun. And I really like Cesaro and Woods working together. Some nice, good finish as well with the springboard elbow onto Cesaro. I liked it.
Yeah, and Miz was really good on commentary, I thought.
Yeah.
He was doing a great job about putting these guys over.
Yeah, he was really putting Cesaro over strong.
And Xavier.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And Woods won with the up, up, down, down elbow. And that's where Corey said, oh, we're about to see the implosion of the New Day. You know, another argument for Woods. I feel like Woods has been showcased more than the other two guys over the last couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, it's always Woods that gets those singles matches. It was Woods who did the Sheamus and Cesaro thing. Woods was the focal point of the Bludgeon Brothers beatdown.
Yeah, and he was in the US title tournament as well,
yes,
as opposed to the other two.
Mm. So, yeah, I really do hope they do something with Xavier.
Yeah.
But from tag team division to tag team champions, it's the Bludgeon Brothers with a promo.
Spooky promo, and they were running down the tag team division. They were saying, like, we're, you know, families are silly. And they show a picture of the Usos. And it was like, and I can't remember what they said about Gallanderson.
Well, I've written down that line.
Oh, excellent.
Family is weak.
Okay.
Talking about the Usos. You called the Bludgeon Brothers. Is this not...
I did not think of that.
I know. No one flagged that up.
I really chuckled. That tickled me, that.
Yeah.
Family is weak, though, Bludgeon Brothers. But my point really was, they keep talking about how they've beaten Gallanderson, but they haven't. We haven't. Like, they might have done on house shows, but I've not seen it.
If WWE said enough, I'm sure it actually happened,
yeah,
and it's true. This was fine. It's just, it's been too many weeks now. What have they done since WrestleMania?
Greatest Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
They had the stuff with Naomi.
Oh, yeah.
Where did that go? Oh, man.
That was actually quite good.
It felt like it was going somewhere, yeah.
Twitter, that's where it went. And they said at the end of this sort of tag division rundown, the only cure to all them being lame is bludgeoning.
Yeah.
And then they hit the camera.
It's got to be sanity.
Bludgeoning's stupid. It's such a stupid gimmick, and that because it's so stupid, it's quite a fine line of if I find it stupid annoying or if I find it stupid fun. And this was a stupid annoying week.
Although it just, every time I hear it though, it puts a bit of a smile on my face. Kind of like Thanos. It puts a smile on my face. Only because
a line that's not in the movie.
Only because in D&D I deal in bludgeoning damage. That's all my weapons are. So it makes me smile a little bit.
I'm glad it's over with you at least.
It is.
Paige was backstage talking on a phone next, because that's what general managers do. They just talk on phones while the show's going on.
But at least we got to hear who she was talking to. Well, at least we found out who she was talking to, because it was baby girl Carmella. And then baby girl Mandy Rose and baby girl Sonya Deville walked in.
I'm not done with the mobile phone stuff, Luke.
Okay, no, you carry on.
It's such a lazy way to start every segment.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you caught me mid-conversation. Yeah, I'm just finishing off that. I get why they do it, because why would you have someone just standing there and someone walks in?
Yeah.
But surely there's got to be a better way.
Well, they don't have a desk they can sit behind where they can do paperwork. Like, that's the problem. You need, like, the commissioner's office.
Yeah,
like William Regal's commissioner's office.
A commissioner's desk where, like Zelina's mid-conversation, where I want this for my debut. Or, like, there's a referee going, oh, I don't know, the Bludgeon Brothers are scary. And Paige is like, yeah, book them in a match. Oh, hi, Absolution. You know, but just...
You mean like NXT does it?
Yeah.
So anyway, so Paige was on the phone and she was talking to Carmella, because Carmella is setting up for her Royal Melebration. And Paige revealed that she has not been invited to the Royal Wedding. Because she's English, you see, and that's what happens. You just get invited to things, to British things, when you're British.
Did you not get invited?
No, I actually did not get my... I'm busy that day. I was already going to a barbecue to celebrate the Royal Wedding.
Oh, wow.
Did you get your invite?
Yeah. Me and Harry are like that, back from his party days.
Yeah, dressing up
me
as a Nazi.
Me and Sami Zayn, yeah.
Not you, obviously. Harry did that, naughty boy. But anyway, baby girl Mandy Rose and baby girl Sonya Deville walked in, and Mandy Rose pointed out that, hey, I beat Becky Lynch last week. Surely that means I'm in Money in the Bank now, right? And Paige said, no. And she was like, oh, but why not? And she goes, well, you're going to be in a match later on. Where you can be in a chance to win in Money in the Bank. And they were like, oh, cool. So we're both going to get to be Money in the Bank. I was like, it's a triple threat. Like, after every line, I was like, It's a triple threat. It's a triple threat. It's a we took so long to get to the point. It turned out to be a triple threat match with Becky Lynch.
Yeah. So they're going to have to... Absolution implodes.
Yep. Oh, the mega powers explode when Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose are going to collide in the ring.
It's not just the triple threat format. It's how many times do Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville have to approach Paige to realize she's not on their side anymore? I mean, it was quite definitive a couple of weeks ago, right? When Paige said Absolution is dead.
Yep.
Don't get your band from ringside. But they still, hey, Paige, how's it going? Eh? Eh?
Hey,
That's an interesting fact. Do you want a fact?
I'd love
well,
a fact.
Actually, is this a fact?
Is this an 80% fact?
It's a rumor, I think. Because I read it on Reddit, and then I followed the tweet link, and it seemed to be true, but I remember thinking, there's not anything that confirms the original Reddit comment. So, I'm going to proceed without caution. So, Sonya Deville is currently dating Zara Schreiber, who is the ex-girlfriend of Seth Rollins.
Really?
It seems to be. Like, this was on Zara's... it was like a tweet she put out, and she said how 2 years ago when she said she was dating a girl, her mum was like, I don't want to hear about it, but now she's really into it, and she made sure to watch the telly last night. And that was tweeted when the Sonya Deville match was on.
Interesting.
There you go.
You know,
there you go.
Timing is everything, I suppose. backstage, Renee Young interviewed AJ Styles, and Renee asked him about what his stipulation was going to be if he wins. And AJ was like, you mean when I win? And then he started talking about inverse ladder matches, a pole on a pole match, a ball rope Hell in a Cell Inferno match.
I like that one.
He's like, you know, it sounded like my mate Graham booking wrestling back in the late 90s and early 2000s.
One of my favourite... Wrestling Road stories, which is a bunch of us in a car coming back from a wrestling show. And we're trying to keep each other awake because it was like 4 a.m., a long drive back. And we just started, okay, fantasy book your dream card. And everyone did like, you know, normal but good dream matches. And then one guy, I won't say his name, but he knows who he is because we still rib him about it. He says, yeah, I'd have Taz and Ken Shamrock and Chris Benoit, and it was like a six-person Hell in a Cell ladder match.
Nice. With the ladder up on top of the cell.
Yeah.
That's exactly what my mate Graham booked back in like the early 2000s. Like, why don't they do Hell in a Cell ladder matches? That would be so cool. Maybe even put like some fire around it. Like, that's what they should definitely do. I don't know why they booked that. They don't book that.
And then you realise reality.
Exactly. Because it would be incredibly dangerous.
But I thought that was good. But next up we had Andrade Cien Almas' debut versus the UK's Jake Constantino.
Yes, a squash match for Andrade. It's funny, my friend Kel was at the show last night, and he was texting me. I was like, mate, you got to get the Almas debut. And he was like, yeah, I'm really excited about that. He said, do you think it'll be a squash match? I was like, no, man, Jeff Hardy hasn't got a program. I'm telling you, they've got to bring him in big. They're going to bring him in big, and it's going to be like an upper mid-card program. And I just got a message from him later on that night. I was like, no, it's a jobber. And I was like, ah. But, so I went, and I was like, no, this is so uninspiring. Andrade came down, he beat up this lad, he won in a minute or so. But then Zelina Vega cut a promo that was just like, this was rubbish. Like, we are genuine stars. Why are we being booked in squash matches? We're so much better than this. And all of a sudden I was like, I'm in. This is great. This is a great way, because like, it's a typical WWE thing to do, is to book someone into a squash match to debut them on TV. But they're like, we're so much better than this. Where's our title shots? Where's my title shot? I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the promo more than, like, I think as a segment works when you have the final piece. But without that final piece, it was awful.
I mean, it wasn't awful, was it? It was just a squash match. But it wasn't a squash match where Andrade really got himself over. It was, you know, he's cool. But if you didn't know, if you weren't familiar with his NXT run, as I'm sure the vast majority of SmackDown viewers weren't, it's like, well, what's there special about this guy that you've showed me in this squash match against the guy that I've never seen before, who's quite obviously just in the local jobber spot? And then Zelina Vega, I hope she lasts and she doesn't get the, what was his name? Paul Ellering treatment. And she did cut that good promo, you know, we're here to take over. But over, like, Nothing screams stellar about this to me.
No, exactly. Like, it's, if next week, if they do a Sage, Paige is on the phone, and then Zelina Vega and Almas walk in and be like, look, we want something better than that, then that's the kind of follow up with that, and then he can get inserted into, you know, a money, maybe turn it into a Money in the Bank qualifier triple threat match, like he gets put into that with Joe and Cass, and do something like that, so you can kind of use this segment to further a storyline.
Yeah,
but if Almas just shows up on next week again and has another squash match, then this train could fall off the wagon soon.
I get that. Could fall off
the track soon.
It's like how many people, the track record of NXT call-ups not fulfilling their potential is so numerous and so weighted in the not working out balance. It's just that you only get one chance for a main roster debut, and this wasn't worth it.
It's funny, actually. I was just reading about that exact thing in a what I've got here is issue 4 of the WrestleTalk magazine, which has an article here. Post WrestleMania is traditionally call up season for stars of the NXT roster. Luke Cohen takes a gander at previous call ups and wonders if promotion to the main roster is all it's cracked up to be. And it's an article written by myself about NXT call ups and how a lot of them haven't been that great over the years.
I like that caption on No Way Jose that says Adam Rose circa 2018 ?
That was not my edition, but I
screw
like it.
Him. This is a great publication. Look, an exclusive interview with Paul Heyman by Kenny McIntosh.
Oh.
You can watch the full interview using groundbreaking QR codes. Wow, that's amazing. The march to the women, the Ronda Rousey stuff, loads of WrestleMania coverage, all the indie shows that have happened.
Yep.
This is superb. A whole piece on Daniel Bryan's return to the ring by the former editor of beloved UK wrestling magazine, now defunct Power Slam, Finlay Martin.
And there's even a revisit to WrestleMania 9. Where we're actually talking about how we think it's not that terrible a show. At least whoever wrote the piece thought as much.
I think it was Dixon.
Dan. Yeah. But you can actually listen to that article by using this groundbreaking technology called QR codes. And it's read by me, and you read articles in the magazine as well.
Yeah, audio versions.
Audio versions.
This is amazing.
It's lovely stuff.
Wow. But you can get those by clicking the link in the video description below. Please do. We're very proud of our WrestleTalk magazine. Put a lot of work into it. And it's superb.
But back to the Almas point. Because if Almas comes out again and just does squash matches, as you said, like the track record of NXT call-ups isn't all that particularly great. Because, I mean, you've only got to look at the Authors of Pain. Like, where have they been? Because they weren't brought up into a storyline. They were just brought up into squash matches and haven't been on TV for a number of weeks now. They were on Main Event this week.
Yeah.
Like, after a while, it's just like, well, we can't just do another squash match, and we haven't got a story for them, so just put them on Main Event.
It's just like, of all the... We fantasy book loads of stuff. That's like, we like to do that off camera as well. Like, oh, how would you do this? How would you do that? And Andrade is a guy who could be your next big Latin American hero. Why would you not put all your resources behind him to give him an impactful first impression? Like I said, you only get one, but you just do it in the standard squash. And there's nothing wrong with introducing people as in squash matches, but it is the lazy route to do. And you could have done something a lot more impactful. Imagine if he just comes in and he wins his Money in the Bank qualifier right away.
Yeah.
That would have been a much better way to do it, and quite decisively against Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton.
And actually, do you want to, I mean, I'm not saying this is what I would have done, but if you want to talk about like a shocking debut and something that was like really impactful, if they had done this beat the clock gimmick, if he'd have beaten AJ Styles.
So, wow, like, that's a good idea.
So, like, everyone is expecting that Nakamura and AJ win their matches. It kind of goes against my point I made earlier of, like, that both winners then go into fight who's the better winner. But, man, like, how over does that get Almas?
Yeah, and it's that plays quite nicely with audience expectations of how those beat-the-clock formats usually go. And you set up another person in that mix who can potentially challenge for AJ's title down the line. Now you've got four people with legitimate claims against Styles' title, and he's defending from all angles.
Yeah.
I actually really, really like that, even though it involves beating AJ.
Yeah.
It doesn't involve beating AJ by the guy he's going to face anyway. Next up, we had Rusev, who is very happy with himself. He's got his own room in London. We treat him well.
Well, Aiden English got him the room. Like, yeah, so Aiden English like went out and he hired him a private room backstage, and he set up this little table that had, I think, some chicken legs on it and pictures of Rusev and a Rusev Day t-shirt hanging up. And Rusev said, like, I mean, this room is nice, but you could have done better. And English was like, well, we are in England and England is smelly. Mm. Therefore, local sports team can't get a better room.
Great.
So that's all fine. He's going to debut a new song at Money in the Bank. And then Yoko Ono walked in. Lana, she walked in, complete with accent this time. Mm. And I suddenly thought, I was like, oh no, I forgot about this. They were going to be breaking up New Day. But it appears that they're not now. It appears they're sticking together as a threesome, as a three-person unit. Lovely stuff.
Lana wears the hell out of a Rusev Day t-shirt.
I mean, I'm not... Yeah, she does.
It's
yeah.
that... She looks great in that Rusev Day t-shirt.
And she has got a match next week against Billie Kay of Iconics for a spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match.
Because they want to be the first ever Mr. and Mrs. Money in the Bank.
What a great gimmick
it's
that is.
It's a great idea.
That's awesome.
And that, yeah, they all did Rusev Day together at the end. No sign of a breakup. Really, really happy that they're hopefully taking this route and this isn't just the swerve for the eventual turn.
This is, if they can stick together, this is thumbs up all round.
And Rusev being happy, Matt, like, how can you not love the guy? He's got such a genuinely endearing, happy face.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was good stuff. What wasn't so good...
Segway.
...was the Royal Melibration. This was announced last week. It was Carmella's Royal style celebration of her beating Charlotte at Backlash, and she got the full work. She got a town crier, kind of. I guess he's not a town. There's a more official title for that.
Yeah, a town crier is what I wrote in my review.
Who like reads off a long list of Carmella's intros. My favourite being from the Isle of Staten.
Yes, that was nice. I mean, you say that she got the full work. She got a town crier, some beef eaters, then that was it.
There was a red carpet in the ring and a few leopard print throws.
Hanging over the ring posts. Yeah. So the beef eaters came out and they presented the championship on like a velvet pillow. I thought that was a really nice touch. And then Carmella came out, moonwalked in high heels, which I think is very impressive. She grabbed the title, she walked down, and then she cut a standard Carmella promo. And the promo kind of consisted of that everyone here doesn't think that I deserve this title, which would be a really interesting character if she didn't beat Charlotte at Backlash. And she said, like, I'm better than Charlotte, I'm better than Becky Lynch, I'm better than Sasha Banks, I'm better than Ronda Rousey. Each one of them getting increasingly more pops. The loudest pops, however, came when she mentioned Trish Stratus and Lita. And I was like, it really shows how not over some of your female talents are when women wrestlers from 18 years ago are getting bigger pops than you are. But anyway, it was a perfectly standard Carmella promo.
It's just that you had all the potential of this Royal Carmellabration celebration. This is hard to say. Thing where you just, yeah, like you said, they just have a few people at the top of the ramp. And then it just falls apart. Not falls apart, but just flattens out into a normal Carmella thing. But there's so much you could have done with this.
So much.
Yeah.
There's so much potential here. And they took the...
No crown.
They took the
no
easiest
rope.
Way out of this, yeah. But anyway, Paige comes out and she says, you're going to have a match. Sorry, do you want to say something else?
I was going to say, Paige came out. This is Paige in London for the first time since her retirement. Not the kind of big reaction I would have thought.
No, and there was a pause in her promo as well to let the crowd chant like welcome back or welcome home, and not many people really did.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. I thought she'd be super over, but no one really cared.
But I thought this segment had such little heat anyway. It was, yeah, and then Paige coming out into her home country didn't even manage to say, but Paige came out to say that you've got a match at Money in the Bank. And Carmella was like, no, I don't want to have a match. And Paige was like, well, you've got to. And it's against this lady here. And out comes Asuka. Asuka got quite a nice pop. But I think it says a lot about SmackDown, WWE, Asuka, and losing the streak. That when she said, you've got a match at Money in the Bank, I was running through the names like, who could it be?
I was like, oh, God, it's Charlotte again. That's what I thought.
I was like, well, it can't be Charlotte.
This is going to be good.
Woo! But I thought, I was like, Charlotte's in the Money in the Bank match, so it's not her. I was like, it's not Becky. And I, it took me ages. And then when asking him, I was like, oh yeah, ask her, of course. Because they've done nothing to follow up on the streak losing. And I have little to care about this match.
Yeah.
Because it's likely that Carmella will win by DQ because they might not want to beat Asuka again. But there's every chance that they'll just have Carmella beat Asuka.
Mm. There's no real... I guess Asuka winning would be good. That's the best thing for everyone here, I think, because Asuka is an extraordinary wrestler. But when she came down, I was like, oh man, I love Asuka. Her presentation, the way she looks, the way she moves, her music. And I was thinking, it is crazy how she hasn't won a main roster title yet.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
They've seriously botched Asuka.
It is. I can't. I don't want to sound too much like a negative Nancy on this show, but yeah, they've really screwed the pooch on this one.
So Nakamura does an interview backstage next. He doesn't know what English is. He doesn't even know what winning or chance means now in the Renee Young interview. And then it weirdly cut back to the, in the version of SmackDown I watched, it cut back to the ring, and Paige weirdly promotes the card for the rest of the night, and then walks out.
Yeah,
that seemed like that was for the live crowd only.
I think it was. On the Nakamura,
it's not live. How does that stay in?
I don't know. But on the Nakamura interview, I thought it was really bizarre. Because Nakamura's whole gimmick at the moment is like, no speak English, but we all know that he does speak English, and he's doing it to troll us. He's doing it to troll Renee Young. And then, so Renee's there, he's like, oh, what do you think of your chances? And he's like, oh, I don't know what chances mean. She's like, well, it means this. He's like, I don't know what that means either. And he's just trying to, and then he cuts a long promo in English. But at no point did Renee Young be like, I thought you couldn't speak English. If the promo and then said ended, we go, sorry, no speak English. And then he walked off. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, that's so good. But he didn't. He got a promo in English. And then he walked off. And Renee Young was like, well, that's the interview over, I guess.
That's a good point. That's a very good point, actually.
And like, and the commentators did. I thought Corey Graves would be like, it's a miracle. He can speak English again. Like, really ham it up. But they didn't. He just spoke English and then walked away. Really odd.
Yeah. Paul Renee is getting a hard time of the presentation. She's been flattened out into that generic interviewer mode where she's not allowed to have a character. Next up, we got Becky Lynch versus Mandy Rose versus Sonya Deville. What? Becky Lynch won?
Yeah, so Becky Lynch is trying to find her role within SmackDown Live. They're saying it in the match. She doesn't want to just be known as the first ever SmackDown Women's Champion. She wants to be champion again. And I was like, this is good. This is good storytelling. And I was genuinely actually surprised that she won this. I thought they might do the, you know, not a losing streak gimmick, but like she just can't get that win. She can't find that what it needs. But maybe she'll go into Money Bank. She won't win. She'll come very close and then not win. And then that will further on this character, which I really, really like. But to the surprise of absolutely no one, Rose and Deville beat down Becky Lynch. And then one of them turned on the other. And the other one got up and was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because it happens in every single one of these three ways when you've got two best friends. They did this on Monday with Alexa Bliss, Mickey James and Bayley. They're the exact same spot.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, man.
I thought Sonya and Becky were pretty good working together. Mandy Rose is just there. Did you see the facts on the entrances? So, you know, they get the little sidebar that comes up and they're like, you know, this person did this before coming to WWE and this person has a degree in thugonomics or whatever in the side screen. So for Mandy Rose, she was a former fitness bikini model winner from 2014, and she got a bachelor's degree from somewhere. Sonya Deville comes out, and she's got lives with best friend Mandy Rose.
Guess one of these. Guess which one of these two WWE really likes.
Yeah. Man, they have given her the Emelina gimmick, and this is everything Vince wanted for Emelina.
Yeah.
And he's got it with Mandy Rose. And, you know, I don't mind the long entrance. I could watch Mandy Rose all day, but not wrestling. I could watch Mandy Rose do everything but wrestle all day.
She does seem like a throwback to like that 2006 era Divas wrestling. Bless her heart. I don't think she's not terrible, but like in this match, she was totally outclassed by both Becky Lynch and Sonya Deville. I thought Deville was really, really good in this match as well. I thought she had some really nice knee strikes and she looked really cool. I really like her presentation. I think she's awesome. I really like Sonya Deville.
I totally agree. I don't think I'm not as into her as you are. That's You really like her that much?
I think she's good, yeah. Awesome's a strong word.
Yeah. I felt like you got carried away with your own thing there.
So carried away with it.
Sonya Deville. This is I like her. She's fine.
I mean, she's a total 3-star wrestler. Yeah. Fine. This is why I'm much better when I get to write things in the script, because I'm like, that was awesome. And then I go, well, was it? And then
carried I get away again. Yeah. Rein it back in.
Highlight, delete. Good.
Asuka, Becky, Sonya Deville. Those are the three people the company should be built around.
The amount of times I've written SmackDown like live review scripts and I've written great match, and then I've got to reread it. I'm like, good.
Yeah, I do that.
Downgrade. Good.
Really good match to just. Good match. A lot of superlatives get taken out when you like look back on it.
But this
this was a really good match, or fine TV match. Yeah. It gets replaced with.
This was good. It had a good finish to it as well. A nice spot when, they were loudly calling spots, but they did like the superplex thing when Sonya Deville went to go do a superplex. But Mandy Rose got underneath her and got Deville up on her shoulders. And then Becky Lynch, rather than drop-kicking off Deville, drop-kicked Mandy. And everyone just sort of crumpled down and looked like they'd all killed themselves. And then Deville hits the Shining Wizard for a near fall. And that's the finish, wasn't it? And then Becky locked them into Summer and won.
Yeah, Rose like kind of collided with Sonya Deville. And yes. She's like, oh no, what did I do? When you were just fighting each other and Becky... got her in the disarmer.
Thank you.
I think Becky would be a really good winner of the briefcase. I think that of all the people in there at the moment, I think she could benefit the most, and it would be a nice close to the current losing streak or whatever they're doing with her character at the moment.
Oh, imagine if she won the belt and then she didn't cash it in as a surprise. She said, like, I'm going to challenge you to this match, and then through whatever, she lost that match. And then that's when she kind of snaps, and that's what causes the heel turn. And you can continue the program on with that.
Oh, I don't think you need a heel turn with
Becky. I'm not saying you need a heel turn either, but it feels like that's where we're heading.
Mm.
I don't think turning a heel is the answer, because she's a great baby face.
I'd like a retribution baby face coming good on coming out of the losing streak. So we got Samoa Joe cutting an excellent promo, as they all are with Joe, just backstage on a phone. It's Joe versus Cass next week in a Money in the Bank qualifying match, and if that doesn't say Cass still has heat on him, I don't know what does.
Yeah, he's getting choked out 100%. I mean, Joe has to go in. I don't imagine Daniel Bryan is going to cost him the match, or either that, or Joe's going to win clean, and then Big Cass will be like, it's because I was beaten down last week by that midget Daniel Bryan, or something along those lines, so we can have that long-awaited rematch at Money in the Bank.
I feel like it's for everyone who's not familiar with the story. There's multiple sites, Pro Wrestling Sheet, Wrestling Observer, have reported that Big Cass has heat on him backstage because that little person segment he had in Montreal, he was told, just do the big boot. And Cass was like, no, I want to do more. I want to beat him up afterwards. And everyone said, no, don't do that. That's not the segment. And he was like, I feel like I really should. He took it to Vince McMahon directly. McMahon said, no, don't do that. I imagine because WWE don't want a video going around of a big guy beating up a little person.
But did that like, with a big boot, though?
Yeah, but to that extent, I don't know. And he did it anyway. And then 6 days later, he taps out to Bryan decisively in 7 minutes. He's not on the next show. And here on SmackDown, he gets, you know, schooled by Bryan pretty quickly again and taps like a wuss. And now he's in a match against Samoa Joe for a Money in the Bank qualifier. And they're both heels. That to me seems like he's got a bit. This is last year's Baron Corbin. There's a lot of parallels when he had heat on him.
It's interesting. I'm not sure how much I totally buy into the story, only because he did the beatdown segment spot on Baron after the Backlash match, and
no, it was before. It was the go home segment.
No, I know. But at back, you said like, and then he got the heat there, and he lost at Backlash. But he also beat down Bryan after the Backlash match.
Mm.
So it's not that he just tapped out clean.
Yeah, I get that.
There was a bit, and they were like, oh my god, look how dangerous Big Cass is, and and then he also came second in the Greatest Royal Rumble.
Mm.
So there is, you know, I don't know.
But that was before.
That was after
Rumble. That was before the go home Backlash. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, it was. Anyway, regardless. So,
Want to see Joe in a Money in the Bank match, though.
Totally, absolutely. But Joe cut this absolutely... I said in the review, I think he's just on a completely another level than everyone else in WWE when it comes to promos.
So they keep him off live TV for multiple weeks.
And speaking of which, Iconics also cut a promo. They cut a cell phone promo, who are also brilliant, but in a different kind of way. I'm so in love with these two.
Yeah. They're really, really good.
They are really great. It was awesome.
The main event was what we've already talked about at great length in the opening. Shinsuke Nakamura versus AJ Styles. We won't go into why the match is a bad idea, but have that as a big asterisk on top of all the applause we're going to give it now, I assume.
Yes.
Because this was a very good match.
This was excellent. I think it might be the best match they've had in this series so far.
Oh, you know what? It might be, because I like the greatest Royal Rumble match, but it's got such a bad finish. But the finish here was really good.
That's what I mean.
So I think as an overall package, you're right.
Yeah, because this match had a finish, whereas the other two didn't. They just had like just non-finishes because they didn't want to book a finish.
Yeah.
But this one actually had a winner coming out of it. So I think this is the best match that these two have had in the four they've had so far. It's amazing spots. Obviously, there was like the commercial breaks, which kind of slows down the pace of it a little bit. But I thought it was a really, really great match. It would have been really awesome for the London crowd there to see it live. It must have been really awesome. And the finish was great, although you've got to question what the referee was thinking. So AJ Styles sets up to do the phenomenal forearm. The referee stands behind Nakamura, like, what are you doing, mate? Get out, you're out of position. And so, but then Nakamura ducks. AJ nearly hits the referee, but stops himself. And then as he's talking to the referee, Nakamura grabs his nuts and falls to the floor. It's like, he hit me in the nuts. And the referee's like, what'd you do that for? And they're just like, I didn't. But as they were arguing, Nakamura pops up, exploded suplex, Kinshasa, and he wins. A great finish. Really great finish. It ties into the story that they've been telling. It's Nakamura's mind games. I thought this was great.
Really good. Yes, it's very good. And not just a good match. Like the whole match leading up to it, there's a really nice sequence on the ring apron where they were both going back and forth trying to hit their respective moves. But the finish was excellent. And just Nakamura as a wrestler, like the heel turn in terms of a character has made him a much better character. But somehow it's made him a better wrestler, definitely. If you go back and you watch pre-heel turn Nakamura matches, they're good. Like they get the John Cena one's really good. The Randy Orton one's good, you know. But mostly it's just like, yeah, they're good. But this, I swear, he's become a better wrestler because he's working stiffer. That there was a bit where he did a flying kick when AJ jumped off the top turnbuckle and he caught him in the neck. It looked fantastic, got a great sound. Just, yeah, the actual striking style, I don't know why turning heel would have changed it. Maybe he just feels more invested in this and he's more excited about it, so he's just working harder. Nakamura doesn't seem to be the guy who is going to work hard if he's not interested in it. Kind of like Randy Orton. Like, if Orton's not into a match and Brock Lesnar, the match suffers, whereas like your AJ's, your Kevin Owens's, they're going to always do their best to put on the match. But sometimes if those other guys aren't motivated. Nakamura seems to be one of those guys because now he's got a heel turn to sink his teeth into. His actual physical wrestling is so, so much better.
I completely agree. I think it's a motivation thing. I think he's just really motivated into this feud. And yeah, and I think that really pays off. The Baron Corbin match is a classic example of like Nakamura just, you know, it was probably the worst match Nakamura's ever had in his entire life. But Nakamura wasn't particularly great in it either. And there's been quite a few matches where people have gone like, I don't see the whole hype about this Nakamura fella. And it's because Nakamura didn't really feel like he was ever enthused about anything that he was really doing, like the gender stuff in particular. But here, like, he just feels so much, he feels like the Nakamura that we've been wanting to see. And I really, really enjoyed this match. You know, as you said, huge asterisk by it, because I thought it was daft to put this on the show, and I think it's ridiculous to book this match to build to the same match we're going to see in a couple of weeks. And I know I've already had someone on Twitter say, like, oh, but it's going to be a stipulation, so it will be a different match. But it's the same match still. But the match was really good. To look at this from a positive side and ignore the silliness of it, this was a great match.
Yes. So what did you give it
overall? I gave it a smack bang in the middle.
I would also give it a smack bang in the middle, mainly based on that last match.
More or less.
It's SmackDown's become a bit of a victim of its own success, we said outside earlier, in that a couple of, like, before WrestleMania, if SmackDown put on this show, I'd say it was a Smacktastic, a 4 out of 5. But because SmackDown was uninteresting most weeks. But SmackDown's been on a very good run recently, and the expectations have changed. So this is a good time for SmackDown.
It is, yeah. There's lots of things that I'm really not feeling at the moment. I'm not into this Daniel Bryan underdog story because he's not an underdog. I'm not into this Carmella undeserving champion because she beat Charlotte. Someone said to me on Twitter that she didn't beat her clean at Backlash. Basically, she beat her clean. She out-wrestled her throughout the entire match. That's more to the point.
She did beat her clean.
Well, no, they argued that because she got a slight leg injury that it wasn't a clean victory.
Who argues that?
So it was someone on... It was when I did that YouTube video last week about pay-per-views worse than Backlash, someone sent me a message on Twitter to say that.
That's right. If it's not like the referee was trying to call it off. That's... No, that's not how it works.
Yes, it was, as I said, it was
a clean victory.
Yeah, so that character doesn't really work at the moment either. And then so now because of that, I'm not really interested in a feud with Asuka. And the Styles Nakamura thing, aside from it being a great match, the stuff leading into their Money in the Bank match just I think is very silly.
Mm.
But I just want SmackDown to be better because I think SmackDown should be better because they got the better roster of the two,
and it's better.
It is a better show, but it should be like that there. It is better. It's just like that's your low bar.
Mm.
It's that they're stepping over that bar at the moment when they should be like leaping over it because they've got such a great roster, such a great depth of talent that they should be putting on smacktastic SmackDown shows each and every week. And they don't. They put on Smack Bang in the Middle shows every week. Come on, Ollie, hit me with some iTunes reviews and let's get the heckins on out of here.
I'm going to hit you up, bro. From Chase Bishop, 6.25 out of 5 stars. The best wrestling podcast on the internet by far. Pritchard, Jericho and Cabana have nothing on Luke and Ollie. Keep up the good work, guys. Thank you, Chase Bishop.
Chase, I do not agree, but thank you very much.
Chase Bishop's 6.25 stars there have actually balanced out that 4-star review. And overall, we've got a mean of about 5.125.
Excellent.
Yes.
Can I, on Eric Bischoff's podcast, I unsubscribed, I couldn't listen to it anymore, but he had a whopper on this week's one, apparently, when, so it was reported in 1996 that WCW approached Bret Hart with a money offer to be like, hey, why don't you come to WCW? And Dave Meltzer wrote about this in The Observer. Conrad brought this up on an episode of Eric Bischoff's podcast.
Well, this is
weeks.
Around Wrestling with Shadows time, right? And he's entertaining multiple. Yeah.
And Eric Bischoff was like, it's not true at all. Like, we never approached Bret with an offer. We just fed that information to Meltzer so he would report it. And then Vince would, it would panic Vince, essentially. And that's what Eric Bischoff claims. Problem there, Eric Bischoff, is that Bret Hart also wrote about it in his book. And as you said, it's on Wrestling with Shadows, and Dave Mills was like, and I had a lot of people in WCW and WWF call me about the offer. Like, that genuinely is an offer that they made in 1996. But, like, it's Eric Bischoff trying to make the claim that's like, we fed in that information to work Dave Meltzer. It's like, well, it worked so much because Bret Hart wrote about it in his book.
What? The wrestling promotion should be more concerned about working the fans into believing and investing in their characters rather than Dave Meltzer.
I know.
It's a very meta... It's like when, the Academy think that's all that matters rather than the actual end viewer. And our final review is from Mighty Mikey. Undeniable. It is undeniable that this is the very best wrestling talk show, and it comes from two undeniably sexy gentlemen. Thank you, Mighty Mikey.
Do you remember what that is from?
No, I was going to bring this up. I was like, what? I don't remember us having a catchphrase that is undeniable.
Oh, this is amazing. Because you even say it. It's on the intro of every single podcast that this... It shows how much I edit this show. Our opening is, they are undeniably sexy.
Ah, of course. Yeah, I guess if you listened to the show, you would know that joke.
You would know it.
Hey, I'm not a podswafter.
You are not.
Well, I am. I'm here right now.
Maybe we need a name for you as well.
Someone
who partakes in the show but doesn't listen to it.
Yeah, or edits it. So it's exclusively me. I'm an Ollie Swafter.
Yep.
I don't know. We've got to get out of here, folks. We will see you on Saturday for our news magazine show. Crap Gimmicks, it's all coming.
Lovely stuff. See you then. Love you. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.